We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by the law offices of Jeffrey M. Leving.
As far as calling plays, you know, I'm going to be the one calling the plays this year. And so I know you'll probably be asking that, so we can, you know, just let you know that from the front end. But that's an exciting thing for me to get back to knowing where we're at. And, you know, it's the fun part right now is building what we want to do better, getting that right with coaches and players that are going to be with us.
It's Bernstein and Rahimi, middays 9 a.m. to noon on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score.
So Matt Nagy's calling plays again, for which players will know more after this draft. And this draft matters so much for this Bears team, all about winning now and saving jobs, and the timing may not be so great. And we talked about it last week when we first saw the article written by our next guest. But now we get a little bit more detail because we get to talk to Kaylin Kaler of Defector.com, Defector Media. She is at Kaylin Kaler on Twitter. And she's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, at APNissan.com. Hello, Kaylin. How are you?
Hey, Dan. How are you? I'm doing well.
I was so excited when you signed on with the Defector, because it was just like the perfect marriage of just a really good writer in just the right place at the right time. And the story of that particular business, and there are some people there with whom I'm friendly and with whom I have also tremendous professional respect. And I'm very glad that I'm a subscriber, and our lives are better with all of you doing what you're doing in the group like that. It's great.
It's been so much fun working there. I've enjoyed it so much. I've been there for a little over a month now, and it's just really fun to get to do what we want. We don't have any terrible, you know, venture capital bosses who are going to lay us off at any second, because I've been through that enough times, and it's just really great. So I encourage anyone listening, if you don't know what we're about, check us out on Defector.com. I think you will really like it. We have a really fun mix of sports and pop culture and opinion and news and just some really good reporting.
And Albert Bernecco teaching me how to cook things. Don't underrate that.
Because
he's a really good cook, and he can put it, he puts everything in terms that put us at ease and walks us through stuff. And that's been really fun.
Yeah, it's really, we have such a good variety of stuff on there. It's just a fun place to spend time on the internet.
It does not sound like the NFL draft is a fun time to spend a place researching right now. When you talk about the thinness of this draft class and how small it is, how do you put that into perspective?
Yeah, so I was reporting for another draft-related story, and an agent was telling me how there's so much fewer players who have signed, they're called standard representation agreements, which is basically just means you signed with an agent. And that's usually kind of a measure of who is considered to be an NFL talent in this draft. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be drafted, but it's just means that an agent felt you were worth the money to sign you. So this year, normally in a normal year, there'd be around 1,800 to 1,900 players who are signing with agents. This year, there are only 657. So that's about a third of the size of the players who are typically signing with agents, which kind of gives you an idea of how much smaller this is. And it's not typically smaller when you're with your day one or day two picks. It's more your day three guys. So your fifth, sixth, and seventh round guys, that's where this pool is getting so much smaller, and particularly with the undrafted free agents as well. That's where there are just so many less guys because the NCAA granted that extra year of eligibility for all players. And so a lot of seniors decided to go back for that fifth season. And in my conversations with agents, a lot of them were trying to tell these guys who are those later round picks, those priority free agent types, to tell them, you know, take advantage of the smaller class size this year. Because next year, if you come out, you're going to be in a much bigger group. Your chances are going to be a lot harder to get drafted because there's going to be a bigger pool. And they said a lot of those guys just decided to go back. Well, one agent told me that the college coaches just recruited better. And a lot of the uncertainty with, you know, guys who maybe didn't get to play a full college season or maybe didn't get to play a college season at all, or they're playing now in FBS ball. For those guys, I mean, a lot of them just decided to go back to school.
Ultimately, either a guy can play or he can't. And whether or not somebody's drafted in the sixth round or seen on a Tuesday tryout or comes in as an undrafted free agent, that you like to think that all the guys who can play will get a chance to play. But what I'm curious about, Kalen, is how they do the possible trade valuations, because usually, you know, a pick the next year is worth significantly less than a pick mm-hmm. in this year. And then they can mm-hmm. add up these sort of aggregate valuations to determine how you can move in this year's draft. Because of the disparity, does that increase the value of a pick next year in a way we haven't seen before when it comes to how we could have trades leading up to and on draft day this year?
I actually think it does. I didn't have anybody specifically tell me that, but I was, you know, in the reporting for this, I was asking around about, you know, how people are treating those late round picks this year. And there were two guys, two personnel executives who told me that they wouldn't be surprised if you see teams sort of strategically trying to package picks this year for value next year. So I'm not sure exactly how, you know, if that means next year's picks are valued higher, because those teams are still going to have to find an interested buyer this year, and that might be difficult if that's the case. But I did hear that it could be part of team strategies to kind of try to get rid of their late round picks this year for future value. Or maybe they can package those late round picks this year to try to move in this draft somehow. But that is something that I did hear, and I do kind of think we will see that in this draft.
It also makes me wonder what the groupthink was for a lot of players who thought that they should stay in school. Not that in general mm-hmm. staying in school is ever a bad thing, but when they know they could have made more money or had more opportunity this year, what do you think scared them? Was it hearing about the salary cap being lower for next year, for example, or something along those lines?
I really think it's the sort of pick next year. I think in my story, there were five guys who were invited to the Senior Bowl who decided to go back to school. The Senior Bowl is a really good measure of what teams think of you. And, you know, Jim Nagy, who runs that, his goal is to get every guy drafted from the Senior Bowl. So when he makes his invites, he's picking players that he thinks are going to be drafted. So for five of those players to decide, you know what, no, I'm not going to play in the Senior Bowl, I'm going to decline, I'm going to go back to school. I mean, I think it was partly just the uncertainty of, well, maybe if I go back next year and I have a full season and I can play and I can show them what I can do, maybe I can increase my stock. I think that was part of it. And I do think the college coaches like really put on a good recruiting pitch. Like I was talking to, you know, I heard from an agent that, you know, Fitz here at Northwestern, like really, really laid it on for Peyton Ramsey, the quarterback, to try to come back for what would have been his sixth year in college football. And Peyton was like, no, you know, I've been in college for too long. I've got to go try to make a professional career. But these college coaches, I think, really tried to, and in a lot of cases were very successful in playing up that uncertainty and, you know, the possibility that these guys can improve their draft pick. But there's also a very equal possibility that they don't improve their stock at all and could even lessen their stock if they get injured or if they play not at the level that they played last year or even if someone else who's at their same position, maybe an underclassman, decides to come out and they're better. So I think there's actually more risk with going back than there was with coming out. But I think the players didn't necessarily see it that way.
Are any of your sources, either on the front office side or the agent side, discussing what the 17th game is going to do in general to the talent pool? Because I look at most Decembers in the NFL after all the attrition, and you see the number of backboard guys who are starting, let alone on an active roster. But you see undrafted players and priority free agents and all these guys thrust into starting roles. You're adding a regular season game now, and we're in uncharted territory is what that's going to mean to general attrition. So how are they gaming it?
I think this is really important for actually last year's class of free agents, like street free agents, so 2020, because since the sort of free agent level player this year, there's less of them. I do think it's going to be really good for the guys last year who maybe didn't make a team, and or maybe they were bouncing back and forth from practice squads but really didn't stick anywhere. I think those guys are going to really benefit, as well as, you know, the ones who are in the 2021 class. But I do think the 2020 guys are really going to get a good shot here, because it's true, like, you are going to have to go through more of those, like, backboard players, as I mentioned in my story. And one thing that I didn't put in my story, because I just couldn't really verify it to the point where I thought I could write it, but it's an interesting thing to sort of wonder. I was going through roster sizes last week, and as of last week, there were three teams that had over 80 players under contract, which the limit right now is 90 for this time of year. You can have up to 90 guys under contract. And I felt like that was really high, because the draft is 2 weeks away. Granted, they can make any cuts they want to before then, but that's dangerously close to the 90-man limit with the draft just 2 weeks away. And then the average roster size is 71, and eight teams were carrying more than 75 players. So I had a couple conversations with personnel executives and some agents, and I was thinking, like, are teams, like, relying less on this year's crop of just the whole draft class in general, the 2021 class, thinking, you know, they need to sign more veterans and rely on more veteran help right now than signing their typical 10-person class of undrafted free agents? Because if you're going to add that many players, like, you're going to be past that 90-man limit. It just felt like there were teams that were carrying a lot more players than normal for this time of year. And most people agreed with me that I talked to. They were like, you know what, that is a good point that you're making.
Which means we're probably going to see a chain reaction in the next year as well. This time next year, if we're talking about the draft that you think is much richer, like, this has ripple effects beyond just it being in and of itself.
Absolutely.
So as we look at the quarterbacks too, we've got a glut of quarterbacks in this draft, and I don't know what next year's crop is going to look like, but we know what happens, Kalen. And by the way, if you want to see Kalen Kaler, you can join the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/Chicago670, the score. You can see all of us involved right now. Is that there's going to be another group that's going to rise to a ridiculous level, because people are so quarterback obsessed, regardless of how good any of them are. They always end up at the top of the draft, and people talk their way into it. Do you see that happening again? Are you hearing that that's going to happen again, that there's just another next crop that we're all going to sort of agree to overrate again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, like, the one thing we can rely on in the draft every year now. I mean, for the last, like, I don't know, decade or so, it didn't used to be like that. The quarterbacks, you know, I remember reading something Peter King wrote recently, and the first quarterback picked, I don't know what draft it was, something in the 80s or early 90s, was, like, in the second round. So, it didn't always used to be like that, but now it certainly is. And I mean, we've seen it this year with already the, you know, Niners trading up to pick what is certainly going to be a quarterback. So I do think so. And I mean, this year, if you look at this class, you know, Trey Lance didn't really come out of nowhere. We knew who he was the year before, but certainly Mac Jones came out of nowhere this season. Joe Burrow, what happened with him? So I do think every year you have these quarterbacks who are not necessarily considered, same as Zach Wilson for this year. So there's actually two of them in this draft. So I do think every year you do have these quarterbacks who play their way into being a top five pick within just one season. And it's really crazy how that happens, but it is just the emphasis on how important that position is for you to succeed as a football team.
Well, you mentioned Trey Lance, and he was the first person I thought of in all of this. He's sexy enough as an unknown because it's North Dakota State to me, so you don't really know how he was going to perform against a different division of football, but he's got that pedigree in his school. So he, to me, is probably a great data point when it comes to considering not just his draft, but the quarterbacks they're in, and then how you evaluate the potential moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to be a really fascinating case study because he played one game this season. So I think, I mean, the pro day that he's having, what is it, today, I think, that the 49ers had a hand in kind of organizing. ESPN reported that earlier this morning. That's going to be really, if they end up drafting him, it's going to be really interesting because I think he's a good example, like you said, of a player who needs the right system and the right development to get him to that next level. But he's shown all of the upside and all of that potential.
Kaylin, really appreciate you taking the time. This was a terrific. Quick question, though. I'm as a Defector subscriber, I'm wondering, how do you guys hang out in the way that it made it so much fun, the sort of old, cool Deadspin, where I like to think that I know you're not in a newsroom together, but is it via Slack? Is like, because like the whole sort of je ne sais quoi of that thing that holds it all together is you guys enjoying each other's company and spending time with each other. Are you doing it virtually to get that vibe?
Yeah. So there's, we have a big Slack room and it's honestly, it was so overwhelming when I first joined because I was not used to like that much interaction all day long. And I'm like, how are we ever going to get any work done here? Because it's just people like sending interesting links. And honestly, that's where we get a lot of our story ideas or blog ideas of what we're going to write about for that day. Like sometimes, you know, there's like some debate happening in the Slack and that's what somebody will end up writing about, or somebody drops a link and you're like, oh, well, that's interesting. I have an opinion on this. So it's actually a really great place to sort of like have those brainstorming conversations and also just like silly and stupid conversations. So that's sort of where it's all taking place. But also every Friday we call it Defector-D. It's like our version of Jeopardy, and we actually stream it live on Twitch. So that's where like people like you or the rest of our subscribers can kind of join in on the fun. And we have a different one of us host every week. We make different categories that are sometimes sports related, sometimes not. And that's a really fun, you know, place where we can hang out. We also have a couple people who do like video game streams during the week. I'm not a huge gamer, so I'm not really involved in those. But if you are a gamer, like that's a fun place to sort of watch us and join the conversation too.
Well, it's all good stuff. And we look forward to having you back on soon. Appreciate it much. Thank you.
Thanks, Kaylin.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Kaylin Kaler of Defector Media, defector.com.
She made it sound a little cooler, but still bleak.
It's pretty bleak this year because the fact that it matters more for the Bears this year, that's the thing. Like if you were in a better position, if you weren't so damn desperate, you could be in a better spot to game it and to take advantage of next year. But they're just not. They're always chasing. They're always desperate because they've been bad at stuff. They've gotten too many things wrong, and now they have to go balls to the wall at a bad draft.
Yeah. The minimizing risk didn't really happen now, did it?
No.
You're exposing yourself. Also, I'm very curious now about the draft next year and what this means for people. That's the real problem. You'd think that people would be able to move forward constructively to where they'd know that they could have come out this year and been ahead. But we get to deal with it all.
The White Sox are ahead. A Luis Robert double has scored Tim Anderson, and Lucas Giolito takes the mound with a 1-0 lead in the bottom of the first inning at Fenway Park. That is an actual live game that's going on right now.
Really weird.
Yeah, it's odd. It's strange. When we come back, I want to talk about the rumor of the contract that Javier Baez apparently turned down, an offer from the Cubs. Some specifics were published, and we will debate the veracity and see what makes sense next on The Score.
Luis Robert
gone.
The Score is Chicago sports.
Chicago sports is The Score.
Thanks for keeping us the number one sports station in Chicago. Listen on your radio, your laptop, your mobile device through the Odyssey app, or tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score. We're live and we're local. 670 The Score, an Odyssey station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score
and 670thescore.com,
Chicago sports station.
The pitch on the way to Baez. Swinging a drive to left field and deep. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Three-run homer, Javier Baez. Cubs lead 6-0.
It's Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Be nice for all parties if Javier Baez can rediscover a little bit of that magic, because it wasn't there last year, and that apparently didn't keep the Cubs from making him a pretty nice offer, at least from some of the details we're trying to triangulate at the moment.
That's right. The report came out yesterday, so then it permeated to a bunch of other news outlets. ESPN's Buster Olney was the first one to write it on Sunday that the Cubs had offered Javier Baez an extension, quote, somewhere in the range of $180 million, end quote, prior to the 2020 season. So this is a pre-pandemic salary that they wanted to offer him. The exact timing of the offer is unclear, but that is according to the reports. And what's also crucial here that we don't know is the average annual value of that contract.
And whether or not that even has anything to do with a post-pandemic world and a post-pandemic vision for a Cubs payroll.
And I think we can all say pretty much in agreement that when it comes to Baez, his worth to a team vis-a-vis a contract was more at that point than it is now, yes?
I think so. I think that goes for a lot of guys, even though Chris Bryant is doing everything he can do to try to, you know, reclaim some of his lost value.
Or as I feared after the game yesterday, get traded.
Oh yeah, that too. I mean, that's the other aspect of this stuff is that Cubs fans have they keep vacillating from this guy's awesome to this guy sucks to you got to pay this guy. How can you let him get away? And they go, wait, well, what are we going to get for him? You know, it's just been you wake up and you don't know what the emotions are. And that's sort of what I asked Russ Dorsey last week when the Sun-Times. He came out with us, and I was trying to sort of put a number on the difference in valuations overall from in aggregate, whether it's Bryant, Baez, Contreras, who's getting the money now? Where is the money? What is the money? And how much has just kind of been vaporized?
If I was going to be conservative about it, definitely maybe $350. Because if you look at it, let's say 3 years ago, and we said, okay, Bryant's going to get 300, Baez is going to get somewhere close to 300, Rizzo might get 200, and now you're looking at it, will one of those guys get 175? Like, to me, people are they'll always in my Twitter mentions for whatever reasons, but now it's, none of these guys are going to get $300 million, and I look at that as, so you thought somebody was going to get $300 million out of this group after a pandemic? No, absolutely not. Like, look at the guys who are getting $300 million. Tatis, Betts, Trout. Those are the guys that have gotten it, right? And Francisco Lindor.
Lindor.
And he
and
was
Trout
the bar.
Was before,
no, he
yeah.
He was the bar. Right. So that nobody, no, none of, even all the, I know people talk about the shortstop group that's coming. Nobody was going to get more than Francisco Lindor. So I think the next thing is you have five shortstops out of there that are really looking to get paid. Out of those five shortstops, you have maybe three that you would consider, you know, elite level shortstops, wherever you want to throw Javi in that mix. I'd say it probably goes Trevor Story, Corey Seager, and Javi, with Carlos Correa and Marcus Semien, you know, behind him. And a couple of those guys are going to be disappointed on the market this year. Like, somebody's not going to have a great year. Somebody's not going to get the offer that they thought they were going to get. And because of the pandemic, as we saw last offseason, there's just not going to be a lot of teams that are vying for these guys and can afford to give somebody $150 million. And now do we know that teams can afford that? Yes. But are there going to be 10, 15 teams lining up for these guys' services? I don't think so.
Ooh, boy. So you turn down 180. What's the alternative? I don't know.
Man, did Russ hit the nail on the head, didn't he? When we were having that conversation, he was bringing those guys up. I was just thinking, you cannot bring up Trout. Also, can we pull back the curtain for a second as we have baseball talk here? If you are on Twitch and you see us looking up at what looks like the sky and making funny faces.
Yes, or the reason why I put up four, as in doing my Tom Brady here, is because she...
I thought you were talking about $400 million to Trout.
No, I was saying four consecutive singles.
Yeah, so if you wonder why we're being a little weird, it's because we're distracted from this 10 a.m. baseball game, because can you blame us? And yeah, that's it. Lucas Giolito is apparently throwing batting practice in Boston. There are no outs. There are two
Lucas
runners
Hendricks.
In scoring. Yeah, there are two runners in scoring position. He's up to 20 pitches. So if you didn't want to see any more of the Kyle Hendricks performance last night, you are now seeing it in Boston. That's a little bit worrisome. As for Javi Baez, this is just the same idea of what we were talking about with Kalen Kaler, is it not? That normally it is prudent to wait, but pre-pandemic and this year for the NFL draft, you're doing yourself any favors.
Everyone underestimates what the coronavirus pandemic did to affect everything. I was reading an article just this morning about a study that has been commissioned, a governmental organization, to look at threats and possibilities over the next 20 years of earthly existence. And they said, we're only now realizing that, and we're still in the middle of it, but this viral pandemic is going to be the most disruptive thing since World War II. The single most destructive planetary event since World War II. And we still don't know exactly how it's going to affect everyone, but talking about climate, about hunger, about democracy, about inequality and violence, and it's not good. And the way it affects baseball, similarly, I don't think people realize just how much it's going to affect guys and just how much it's going to affect contracts, teams, trajectories toward championships, completely resetting some things in some cases, and we're so close to it day to day. You know, we sit here and talk about sports for 3 hours every day. There's going to be a time where we're going to emerge from it and realize, and you just saw Layla make a face as another ball just got hit in the outfield.
I mean, they're going station to station now, or are they counting that as a double?
No,
double.
It's 6-1 now. Jeez. Boston in the first. And
dadgummit! Yes, I am Hawk Rahimi right now about this.
And one out. But I think a lot of these things are going to come into focus with a lot more perspective and much later. But this is going to have a tectonic effect on baseball salaries, even in the high class. Not just, I mean, you got your elite that he talked about, but what used to be considered high class is now moving back towards some sort of amorphous middle.
We're not even talking about the main driver prior to the pandemic of what was going to cause baseball salaries to at least become stagnant, and that is the cable TV rights deals, because people are cutting the cord. They're cutting the cord. They're cutting cable. And what that means is you are not going to have the same viewership there. The pie is getting further segmented. So you can't fork over these massive deals that we saw Time Warner, for example, give to the Dodgers. Just not going to happen anymore. And it is going to affect player salaries.
It's not just sports either. You see what's happening with award shows? They're saying, like, with the Oscars coming up, looking at who got locked in to overpaying for award shows that people aren't watching anymore, because we're not having shared theatrical and television experiences, because we're all watching whatever we want when we want to watch it, and we don't really feel connected to a community that has to gather in a room and validate things by giving people glamorous awards.
You mean the Hollywood Foreign Press isn't 100% correct all the time,
or anybody, because nobody cares. It doesn't matter. It doesn't confer. It doesn't feel special or opulent anymore. And then you have this very same celebrities sharing all of their intimate pictures on Instagram and Twitter, and you're connected with them in a way that you weren't before. Not to mention that even the old people who were relying on over-the-air primetime television because of the pandemic learned how to stream and learned how to time shift and learned how to cord cut, and that the people that didn't, that's all right, I'm gonna turn on my TV and watch my programs, that it was the pandemic that accelerated all of that fracturing, and that has changed. We're all rewiring everything. Everything's rewiring, and it's affecting absolutely everything. You know, we start out talking about Javi Baez leaving money on the table, and it's a whole lot bigger than that. Well, we have the Midday Midway coming up next. We have a classic Midway story. Thank you, everybody who sent it to me. Everybody reached out, said, we got to hear this on the Midway. Indeed, you will. And if you have trouble finding a garden gnome, there's a good reason why.
At some point, we have to stop the food bloggers.
Jay's right here.
Jay doesn't count in this. Jay's not a 20-something, 95-pound woman who claims that she eats food, because this is proof that this person doesn't.
All that next on the Midday Midway on The Score.
Radio.com is now Audacy, AUDACY. Download the Audacy app and listen to 670 The Score and all the sports, news, music, and podcasts. 670 The Score. and Odyssey Station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five,
six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
Nine, ten.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Well, what have we done so far? We discussed the weekend in baseball. I discussed my bad weekend of home improvement projects that have resulted in my hands being covered in dried polyurethane foam and having inhaled both ether and spray paint fumes, although I did successfully spray paint a baseball batting helmet. And Kalen Kaler was with us. Vinny Duber was with us. We also discussed Javier Baez and the news that he had turned down a pre-pandemic offer of a $180 million contract over a certain number of years. And then that devolved into some dystopian hellscape, as things do. And
we got distracted. And we got distracted on this show. Talking about baseball and watching baseball at the same time because we're not used to this.
No, because
it's 10:47 in the morning.
Trying to watch Lucas Giolito navigate his way through a 40-pitch first inning, and they're down 6-1. There's still just one out, and there's two runners on, and he apparently has gone to the zoo. He's Lucas is at the zoo now. There's a baseball game going on, but he's left. He is eating cotton candy and throwing peanuts to the elephants.
And you know what? Why do you have him still in there with 40 pitches and one out? Get him out of there. Oh, wait. Am I talking about Tony La Russa not having somebody warm up in a bullpen potentially or leaving a pitcher in for throwing too many pitches in a single inning when it's high leverage and I'm concerned about the health of his actual arm? Is that happening right now?
Maybe.
I told you we were going to the dark places today.
And not take responsibility.
Do you want me to start with something worse, or do you want to start?
I just want to start real quick. If you're having problems finding a garden gnome, there's a reason for it, because apparently they are unavailable in a lot of places, including the UK and Europe. I don't know how they are here, but there's been a run on garden gnomes. And part of what happened was a lot of the garden gnomes were blocked in the Suez Canal because of the ship. The ship that went sideways and ran aground either had garden gnomes on it or was standing in the way of the ships that had the garden gnomes. So it's going to be a while. This is sort of like toilet paper or Lysol wipes, and it had nothing to do with anything pandemic related, but you're going to have to wait on your gnomes.
But there were a whole bunch of conspiracy theories about why that ship was there. And, oh, you mean to tell me it's garden gnomes? What are the garden gnomes holding, Dan?
Crystal meth, probably.
Yes.
Yep.
No, meth is homemade.
Oh.
back in my day, we used to call it bathtub crank. I'm not kidding. That was a nickname for it in East Texas. Ask me if I had any idea what it was.
What?
Bathtub crank. And the way people said it was hilarious. Bathtub crank. And then, like, you'd have to have stickers. I was like, what even goes into meth? And then, like, they would have stickers on certain items, and it would say, like, meth watch. And then I'm like, wait a second. If you follow all these stickers in a grocery store, then you could figure out how to make it.
Yeah, pseudoephedrine hydrochloride.
No, there's other stuff, like liquid smoke. I don't know.
Oh, by the way, may I just for a second?
This is the nature of the segment.
Speaking of buying stuff, I realized I needed a can of spray paint. Okay, I get up on Sunday morning, I'm like, all right, I need navy blue Krylon all-in-one spray paint. Okay, great. Go to the Home Depot right there, Addison and Kimball, and I go in, and I say hello to the greeter, and I go to the paint aisle, and I walk around, and I can't find any spray paint. And I'm like, I am really dumb. I'm in a Home Depot, and I can't find spray paint.
You really did want to get high.
And I'm walking around, and I'm walking around, and I'm walking around, I'm looking, and there's no spray paint. And finally, I find somebody in an orange apron, and I say, I'm a complete idiot, but I can't find the spray paint. And the guy smiles at me and says, yeah, this is Chicago. And I said, what do you mean? Like, I gotta bribe somebody? They said, no, you can't buy spray paint in Chicago.
I did not know that.
I did not know that either. You literally cannot buy spray paint within the city limits of Chicago. So thankfully, a nice man overheard, and he tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, Lincolnwood, the Lowe's on Tui. He said, go take 94 up to Tui, make a right, go past Bagel and Bialy, and keep going on your right. You'll get to the Lowe's. They got spray paint.
Can't take away my spray paint freedoms.
Well, they did, and you can't buy spray paint in Chicago. So
that's a bummer.
I know, but that's not why you called. Sorry.
No, this is pretty bad, and I don't think we should talk about it, but we need to talk about it. Jay, Dan, Jordan, family. Have you guys heard of this popcorn salad?
What?
Molly Ye, who is a very popular food blogger, and has a show called Girl Meets Farm. And I believe she's based in Minnesota because I attempted her hot dish one time. You know, the Minnesota idea of like
North
the
chicken, Dakota
yeah,
casserole.
Chicken pot pie with you top it with tater tots. And by the way, her recipe had absolutely no spice, which should have been my first warning about this individual. And also, food blogs are always like, it takes 20 minutes of prep time. No, it did not. It took 2 hours. Are you drunk? Probably not. Because that would involve ingesting calories, which none of these people do. Or else they wouldn't have come up with a popcorn salad. It's popcorn and mayo and everything disgusting that you don't want together. Carrots, sugar, snap peas, vinegar, shallots, celery, watercress, sugar, and salt. And she says it's a classic Midwestern dish. What?
Nope. No, it's not.
Also, it's soggy and disgusting. And who thinks this is a good idea?
Who wants wet popcorn? That's God, gross.
What on earth? Like, what classic Midwestern dish? Am I missing something here?
Just because it's covered in mayo doesn't make it classic Midwestern.
Popcorn salad.
It sounds
what
vile.
On earth?
Absolutely vile.
Yeah, because like, mayo sucks. My column.
Stop like it. You know how we used to talk about the man card and how dumb that is? Take away her food blogger card. You should be cut off.
Well, if she weighs 95 pounds, like you said, then she's automatically out.
And I'm telling you, that hot dish, the Minnesota thing, which actually is like Midwestern culinary whatever, was not that good. Like, you need way more spice and poultry seasoning and, frankly, a lot more black pepper.
There, Twitter is a buzz right now because it just so happens Alex Cora, as you know, is the manager of the Red Sox. And apparently Matthew Puglio of NBC Sports Edge says it sure seems like the Red Sox know when Giolito's changeup is coming. He's thrown 8, and the Red Sox have swung at 7 of them.
That's not good because that's supposed to be out of the same arm slot as everything else he's throwing.
I think there's something else being alleged here, if I catch the drift of some of this.
Oh,
because
dear.
Of the history and because of, I don't know, are we talking about computers and machine learning and maybe letting people know what's coming? That's what seems to be the concern right now. But more importantly than that, thanks to everybody who sent this story, knowing, of course, we would do this on the Midday Midway. A suspected poacher was killed by a herd of breeding elephants that he encountered while fleeing from park rangers, according to South African officials. 3 people attempted to run away after they were spotted by rangers at the Kruger National Park, one of Africa's largest game reserves, on Saturday. And here's the best part of this. One of the suspects was captured. He told park rangers the group had run into a herd of elephants, adding he was not sure if his alleged accomplice had managed to escape. So you think that they're there elephant poaching, and the elephants got their revenge, right?
Yes.
I'm reading on. Rangers discovered the man badly trampled and dead from his injuries. Investigators say they're searching for a third suspect who continued to flee after he suffered an eye injury. The men were attempting to poach rhinoceros. According to officials, a rifle and axe were recovered. So they were there rhinoceros poaching, and the elephants came in and trampled them.
Good.
That's awesome. That's just fantastic. That is absolutely good. They were there illegally killing rhinoceros. The elephants are like, you should think we should handle these guys? That's a trampling. Poaching a rhinoceros, that's definitely a trampling.
That's such a good Simpsons reference. And now you've got me laughing so much, I can't think of what the original...
A paddling.
Paddling.
Paddling a canoe. That's definitely a paddling. It's Jasper, right?
You know what? So... This stupid White Sox-Red Sox game is the popcorn salad of baseball today.
I can't... That's got to be a troll. The
it's
popcorn
not,
salad
I'm
thing has got to be...
I'm telling you, she thinks that she's like the expert on Midwestern food and that... A popcorn salad is a classic Midwestern dish.
No. Hell no.
I'm telling you, the hot dish wasn't that good either.
But aren't there different versions of hot dish? Like, I've heard of the chicken.
Oh, heck yes. There's a multitude of recipes.
I remember.
But her recipe was not good.
Years ago, we had Travis Hafner on the show.
Pronk. Oh, yeah.
He's from North Dakota.
Former Texas Ranger as well.
And Travis Hafner, who I at the time called the scariest looking hitter in baseball, just because of how he looked and loomed like that.
Kind of looked like Vin Diesel.
And he said his favorite food was hot dish. But when he described hot dish, it was like egg noodles and like a tomato-based beef sauce. It was almost like a... like a chili mac, like a baked kind of chili mac thing that he described.
Yeah, there's a ton of them. And I think one of the, at least from what I understood in my research, was that being topped with tater tots is one of the key, I don't know, indicators of a hot dish, components.
Green bean casserole count? Tuna casserole has to count.
I call them casseroles.
Yes.
I don't know what constitutes a hot dish other than the topping of the tater tots.
Which is very much Irish Scottish, like a shepherd's pie.
Yeah,
it's an Americanized version of that.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. It just looked good, so I made it because I had time in the quarantine and all.
Tuna casserole sounds good.
But it didn't have enough spice, and that should have been my first clue that Molly Yeh might not be on the right track here. But that popcorn salad, I just cannot.
No, thank you. Then right
just
out.
These gossip bloggers just out here writing stuff.
Yeah. Trevor Bauer would actually be correct about her in that case.
That is the Midday Midway. Coming up next, I have something that is going to come off like sorcery. You're not going to believe this. And I promise you that this is real. And what it is a 3-paragraph scouting report on your mean Mercedes from a Fangraphs scout 2 years ago. This is like a Nostradamus bit. But you're gonna be absolutely blown away by this, and you have your mean Mercedes facts and figures and fun as well.
Yes, I found the good your mean Mercedes article with some quotes that are just tremendous. So let's have some your mean appreciation.
All things your mean next on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!